This is available as a podcast and a webinar.
What?
All right, good afternoon and welcome to our presentation on difficult litigants, or our subtitle, how to survive the dawn of the difficult. And you'll see in a moment why I refer to them as the dawn of the difficult. It is a play on words. Hope nobody's offended, but we're going to talk frankly about the difficult people that we are going to deal with. Welcome. Please make sure that you're muted unless you're actively asking questions. If you leave your camera on, please don't get up and walk away. Please ensure that you're paying attention. If you have a question, you can put it in the chat box. You can unmute yourself and ask the question, or you can raise your hand. So who are we talking about? And so we're talking about vexatious people, prolific people, and you'll see why I call them prolific as well. Loquacious people, sovereign citizens. I use the term terminators, difficult or disruptive people, First Amendment auditors. At the bottom line, they're a lot of them are self-represented litigants, and they are our customers. And so for our difficult peoples, there are some key characteristics. They're never satisfied. They don't communicate easily with others. They can be argumentative and unreasonable, and they can use their power to obstruct or try to obstruct. For self-represented litigants and customers, remember that they are always entitled to procedural fairness. So we are concerned about neutrality, that the litigant perceives that we are unbiased and trustworthy, and that a trustworthy decision is made, that the litigant feels respected. They feel like they have been treated with dignity and respect, that the litigant understands how decisions are made and what to expect, and that the litigants feel that they have had the opportunity to be heard. And I have a slide in here, a couple of slides in here for judicial employees, and well, you're judicial officers, but we want to talk about judicial employees because you need to know what the employees, what your staff can do. So under the Code of Conduct for Judicial Employees, Canon 2, a judicial employee shall perform the duties of judicial employment impartially, competently, and diligently. And under 2.6, for assistance to litigants, a judicial employee shall assist litigants to access the courts by providing prompt and courteous customer service and accurate information consistent with the employee's responsibilities and knowledge and the court's resources and procedures, while remaining neutral and impartial and avoiding the unauthorized practice of law. And then they're allowed to provide this assistance. So explain how to accomplish various actions within the court system and provide information about court procedures, answer questions about court policies and procedures, explain legal terms without providing legal interpretations, provide forms and answer procedural questions about how to complete court papers and forms, provide public case information without providing confidential case information, provide information on various procedural options without giving an opinion about what remedies to seek or which option is best. Because if they were to do that, then that would be legal advice. They can cite statutes, court rules, or ordinances a judicial employee knows in order to perform the employee's job without performing legal research for court customers. When asked to recommend a legal professional, they can refer the customer to a resource like a directory or referral service without recommending a specific legal professional, and they can provide scheduling and other information about a case. And for judicial officers, we are looking at Rule 2.2. A judge shall uphold and apply the law and shall perform all duties of judicial office fairly and impartially. Under comment four, it is not a violation of this rule for a judge to make reasonable accommodations to ensure self-represented litigants the opportunity to have their matters fairly heard. Ensuring the right to be heard, a judge shall accord to every person who has a legal interest in a proceeding or that person's lawyer the right to be heard according to law. And comment one says the right to be heard is an essential component of a fair and impartial system of justice. Substantive rights of litigants can be protected only if procedures protecting the right to be heard are observed. And this slide is a proposed amendment. This was filed by Judge Thumma on behalf of the Arizona Commission on Access to Justice. And this would add a proposed comment two to Rule 2.6 to more specifically indicate what a judge can do to gently nudge self-represented litigants. And so what that proposed comment is, the steps that are permissible in ensuring a self-represented litigant's right to be heard according to law include but are not limited to liberally construing pleadings, providing brief information about the proceeding and evidentiary and foundational requirements, modifying the traditional order of taking evidence, attempting to make legal concepts understandable, explaining the basis for a ruling, and making referrals to any resources available to assist the litigant in preparation of the case. Self-represented litigants are still required to comply with the same substantive law and procedural requirements as represented litigants. This will be considered by the Supreme Court in August. If they adopt it, it would probably go into effect on January 1st. And if this sounds familiar, it is very similar to what we have done in our best practice on ensuring access to justice for self-represented litigants. And we've had several classes that are on assisting self-represented litigants that are in our feed. All right, so the next group are the vexatious, loquacious, and prolific people. And why I hesitate to use the term vexatious is because there is a specific definition for vexatious in the statutes in ARS Title 12. ARS Title 12 is for civil matters, and so 12-3201 does say, in a non-criminal case, at the request of a party or on the court's own motion, the presiding judge of the Superior Court, so that's Superior Court, or a judge designated by the presiding judge of the Superior Court, may designate a pro se litigant, a vexatious litigant. And just a reminder, pro se litigant, pro per litigant, are frankly antiquated terms to refer to self-represented litigants. A pro se litigant who is designated a vexatious litigant may not file a new pleading, motion, or other document without prior leave of the court. So if the judge of the Superior Court or presiding judge of the Superior Court has designated someone as vexatious, they cannot file a new pleading, motion, or other document. And a pro se litigant is a vexatious litigant if the court finds the pro se litigant engaged in vexatious conduct. And for the purposes of this section, vexatious conduct includes repeated filing of court actions solely or primarily for the purpose of harassment, unreasonably expanding or delaying court proceedings, court actions brought or defended without substantial justification, engaging in abusive discovery or conduct in discovery that has resulted in the imposition of sanctions against the pro se litigant, a pattern of making unreasonable, repetitive, and excessive requests for information, repeated filing of documents or requests for relief that have been the subject of previous rulings by the court in the same litigation. Now, we do have an administrative order that was done by the presiding Maricopa County Superior Court judge in 2014, and that's 2014-134. And that was Judge Norm Davis, who was the presiding judge at the time. And that administrative order is still in effect. And so paragraph one says, with respect to a specific case, if the request to declare a litigant vexatious is specific to the case in which the request was filed, such as the litigant is repeatedly filing motions in a specific case to harass another party in the case, the judge assigned to that case shall retain the request, hold any hearing necessary, and issue a ruling on the vexatious litigant request relating to that case. I have a slightly different way of suggested way to handle that, and we'll get to that in a couple minutes. And I have attached this administrative order to your packet. And so this is my way of handling a vexatious litigant in a specific case. And you can tell it's mine because you see the little graphic of how to pronounce my name. So this is my best practice, my tip. Do not entertain any motion to strike a pleading or prohibit a party from filing. That's because it's part of the record and you might be infringing on their First Amendment rights. If they're going to kill trees, let them kill trees. Rather, enter an order that the opposing party need not respond to any pleading unless the court orders the opposing party to respond. So in other words, file away, but the other side, you don't have to waste your attorney's fees. You don't have to waste your time on responding to anything. Unless I look at it and think, you know, gosh, maybe you do need to respond to this. In that case, I'll indicate you need to respond. This way, you're not infringing on any First Amendment right. They can do whatever, you know, and if they file it, it's already become part of the record. So I'm kind of concerned about striking that. I think this is the best way to handle someone. It's also, if you think about it, kind of demeaning or you know, it's the person should be kind of concerned that the judge has indicated that to the other side, you don't need to respond unless I tell you to. All right, so then paragraph 3 of that administrative order tells you how to deal with someone who you want to stop from filing new lawsuits. So if the request to declare the litigant vexatious is not related to a specific case, but is filed as a standalone request, the Superior Court clerk will assign it a case number and the Superior Court presiding judge will assign it to a judge for consideration. The judge shall hold any hearing necessary. If the judge believes it may be appropriate to declare the litigant vexatious for future cases, the judge may issue a minute entry which provides the facts as found by the judge and refer it to the Superior Court presiding judge for consideration of whether to issue a vexatious litigant administrative order. So if we want to try to bar someone from filing new lawsuits, and we've been in that situation where we've had people file repeated lawsuits, that's going to have to go to the presiding Superior Court judge, who's currently Joseph Welty. He will assign it presumably to another Superior Court judge, and that judge will make the decision. And we do have a form for that. That form is admin 0005, request for vexatious litigant designation. That is also attached to your packet. This graphic only has 1 and 2, but we go on for quite a bit because I think if you're going to want to try to bar someone from filing new lawsuits, you're going to have more than a couple of examples. You're probably going to need to give at least 5 or 6 because that's a pretty drastic step. So just a reminder, for vexatious litigants, only the Superior Court can declare someone vexatious to prevent future filings. If they're actually declared vexatious, we can deny a waiver of fees, or we must order them to pay the fees that have been deferred or waived. So under ARS section 12-302, a waiver of court fees or costs shall not be granted for a civil action filed by a pro se litigant who has been previously declared a vexatious litigant by any court. And then it later says, if an applicant who is granted a deferral or waiver is found to be vexatious by any court during the pendency of the action, the court shall order the applicant to pay the deferred or waived fees and costs. All right, so let's move on to sovereign citizens, or as I'll refer to this class of people, terminators. And these are the difficult or disruptive.
You understand that terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear, and it absolutely will not stop ever until you are dead.
kind of dramatic, but that's how we feel sometimes when you're trying to talk to someone who cannot be reasoned with. And we're going to have a lot of videos in this presentation, and some of them are going to be jumpy and not play well. What I'm going to do is at the end of the presentation, I'm going to repost all of the videos except for the last one. And so you can go onto YouTube and go to the end. I'm also going to include a link that is just for the videos. And so another way of looking at this is A Fish Called Wanda.
Apes don't read philosophy.
Yes, they do. Or they just don't understand it.
So if you don't recall A Fish Called Wanda, Wanda would call Otto stupid. And Otto's response was, well, I can't be stupid because I read philosophy. And her response is, yes, you can still be stupid. You can read philosophy. You just don't understand it. And the reason we say that is because sovereign citizens are going to, may seem that they're well-educated, but really don't have a clue what they're talking about or are using everything out of context. And I'm going to quote Judge Frank Easterbrook from the Seventh Circuit in a 1986 case. He said, some people believe with great fervor preposterous things that just happen to coincide with their self-interest. And a great example of that is the actor Wesley Snipes, who went to a bunch of websites and convinced himself that he didn't need to pay taxes. And so he ended up in federal prison for not paying taxes. Now, I do have a couple of graphics here. One of them is Faber College. Knowledge is good. Where does Faber College come from? That's not a real college.
Animal House.
Animal House. I was about to say, Branham, you're going to know that one. All right. And the next one, University of American Samoa Law School. That's not real. Where does that come from? Come on. It comes from two TV shows. Bueller, come on.
Breaking Bad.
Thank you. Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. That is where Saul Goodman got his mail order law school degree. So surely you can't be serious. Yes, I am. And don't call me Shirley. So some of the major beliefs of sovereign citizens are a person who signs for a license, whether it be a driver license or a fishing license, or any government document becomes a 14th Amendment citizen. This person then loses all constitutional protections and is enslaved to the state. A lot of them are hung up over the gold standard because we went off the gold standard in 1933. The US went bankrupt and the government both secretly pledged all US citizens as collateral for the national debt, as well as set up a secret account with money for each citizen. At birth, a fictional person is created when the child has a birth certificate created. This is known as a straw man. And if a person files or fills out an array of documents, they can become a free or sovereign citizen once again. Again, surely you can't be serious. So a sovereign citizen, and I'm going to give kudos here to Kim Hassel, who is the court manager for Manistee. She did a lot of these slides for sovereign citizens, so let's give her some recognition. A sovereign citizen is a person who believes in rights and power for the individual, believes that virtually all existing government in the U.S. is illegitimate. Okay, somebody needs to be muted. Wants to restore the U.S. to a minimalist government, which has never existed. Does not trust the government. Wants more power in the hands of the individual. Maintains that they are free of any legal constraints, believes they do not have to answer to any government authority, including courts, taxing entities, motor vehicle departments, and law enforcement. And you'll see I put a blue arrow there by All Rights Reserved UCC 1-308. And that is because we're going to see that. When you're dealing with sovereign citizens, you're going to see that a lot. So what exactly, because again, I'm pretty sure they don't have a clue what the UCC 1-308 actually says and what it actually means. So the UCC is the Uniform Commercial Code. The Uniform Commercial Code in and of itself is absolutely meaningless. What that is a series of proposed laws that are meaningless unless a state has actually adopted the Uniform Commercial Code. As it turns out, Arizona has adopted the Uniform Commercial Code, and that is in Title 47. And the way that it is adopted in Title 47 is 1-308 would actually be 47-1308. But we'll start with what exactly does the UCC apply to. That's in 47-1102, which in the UCC would be 1-102. So this chapter applies to a transaction, to the extent that it is governed by another chapter of this title. And so what 47-1-308 or UCC 1-308 actually says, a party that with explicit reservation of rights performs or promises performance or assents to performance in a manner demanded or offered by the other party does not prejudice the rights reserved. Such words as without prejudice, under protest, or the like are sufficient. And then it further defines party, because we did see party in 1308. Party is distinguished from third party, means a person that has engaged in a transaction or made an agreement subject to this title. So if it wasn't clear before, hopefully it's clear now that UCC 1-308 applies to commercial transactions. It has no effect whatsoever in our courts. So they may think that they're reserving rights or doing something magical. They are doing no such thing. All right, the sovereign citizen also asserts principles of founding documents, such as the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the U.S. Constitution. Well, the Declaration of Independence, and we all know the beginning of the Declaration of Independence is very beautiful language, very strong language, has no legal effect whatsoever. The Articles of Confederation were replaced by the U.S. Constitution, so they have no effect whatsoever. And of course, we are all subject to the U.S. Constitution when you are reading it correctly. A sovereign citizen can often refuse to hold Social Security cards or a driver's license. They are well studied in conspiracy theories. They believe in common law or God's law, which may conveniently be exactly what they want it to be. They can call themselves state citizens, freemen, preamble citizens, non-resident aliens, constitutionalists, and indigenous Americans. And some of their ideology, they will reject U.S. citizenship and operate outside of laws and regulations. The federal government operates as a corporation. They reject the authority of government and government officials. Amendments, laws, and regulations are illegitimate. State citizenship, they believe in state citizenship rather than U.S. citizenship. And anyone can be free from licenses and registrations, Social Security, taxes, laws and regulations, federal, state, and local government authority. So again, to back up a few slides, you know, it's just convenient that they can decide that none of this applies to themselves. And there are many groups within the sovereign citizens movement with differences in ethnicity and religion. These groups operate in the same manner. Again, they go to many of the same websites. They hold the same belief in the illegitimacy of the U.S. government. And we'll talk about three of those groups now. And the Moorish nation, we'll begin with them, also known as Moors, Moorish, or Moorish. And when you see one in your court or come in, you'll recognize them immediately. They are dressed very colorfully and lavishly. So they call themselves an American foreign national or diplomat of the Moorish American national government. They can add Ali, El, Day, Bay, and or El to their last names. They believe in a make-believe 1787 treaty between the United States and Morocco that grants them immunity from U.S. law. Some of the other examples are the Free Moorish Nation, the United Mashak Nation of Noors,
the Nuwabian Nation of Moors, Al-Moroccan Empire. And these groups primarily operate throughout the Southeast, Northeast, and Midwest United States. Again, I've had one of them in our courts here. It still shakes my head. All right, the next one is the Ouachita Nation. And they're the official empire, Ouachita de Dugda Mundia. They believe they are the true ancient ones. They claim to be a sovereign state of Native Americans within the boundaries of the United States. They believe the land sold in the Louisiana Purchase belonged to the ancient ones of Ouachita, and Napoleon had no right to sell the land to the United States. And they live by the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which is a Ouachita Nation Article of Rights. Okay. Surely you can't be serious. All right, Posse Comitatus, you probably heard of them. And that's developed through strong ties to the white supremacist Christian identity movement. They believe themselves to be the true Israelites chosen by God, and they state that the Jews seek to help Satan destroy civilization and undermine white citizens' rights by means of the Federal Reserve and the IRS. They believe in the power of the county and want to restore the republic. Original followers were anti-government militia, white supremacists, and other radical groups. Members do practice survivalism. They played a role in the formation of the armed citizens militias in the 1990s, and they pioneered the use of false liens and other types of paper terrorism to harass opponents with frivolous legal actions. Okay, somebody needs to be muted. So let's talk about paper terrorism. This involves the use of fraudulent legal documents and filings, as well as the misuse of legitimate documents and filings in order to intimidate, harass, and coerce public officials, law enforcement, and private citizens. The paper attacks intimidate their target and have the beneficial side effect of clogging up a court system, the same system they believe is illegitimate. They hold illegal courts that issue warrants and liens for judges and police officers. Most of the papers they file seek relief from criminal charges or demand money. A simple traffic violation or pet licensing case can end up provoking dozens of court filings containing hundreds of pages of pseudo-legal nonsense. Some of the samplings of those court findings, so they can respond to traffic tickets, and they can demand that the court official respond with authentication of authority, a certified copy of the official's oath, a certified copy of the official's bar bond, and so on. So they'll demand to see your oath of office. They'll demand to see your certification, and we'll see that later in one of the videos. A response to a traffic ticket or other charge is labeled as an affidavit of specific negative averment, opportunity to cure, and counterclaim. And Scott Davis just sent me some from McDowell Mountain, and just some of the nonsense that was, including a fake money order. It's just really hard to believe some of the stuff that can come up. Notices of default and commercial liens and demands for payment. Non-statutory abatement, including notice of default, a default judgment, and a precipe, notice of default for notice and demand for full disclosure, a registered warrant claim for a trust special deposit, a notice of silver surety bond, or a certificate of non-response. And so here's the good news. Assuming we can get the prosecutor's interest, we can start charging these people criminally for making false filings. So the first one I would look to is harassment, which is a class 5 felony that's in 13.29.21. A person commits harassment against a public officer or employee if the person with intent to harass files a non-consensual lien against any public officer or employee that is not accompanied by an order or a judgment from a court of competent jurisdiction, that would be us, thank you, authorizing the filing of the lien, or is not issued by a governmental entity or political subdivision or agency pursuant to its statutory authority, a validly licensed utility or water delivery company, a mechanics lien claimant, or an entity created under covenants, conditions, restrictions, and declarations affecting real property. So the nonsense that they file can be considered harassment. Tampering with a public record is a class 6 felony, and a person commits that if with the intent to defraud or deceive, a person knowingly makes or completes a written instrument knowing that it has been falsely made, which purports to be a public record or true copy thereof, or alters or makes a false entry in a written instrument which is a public record, or presents or uses a written instrument which is or purports to be a public record or a copy of such public record, knowing that it has been falsely made, completed, or altered with the intent that it be taken as genuine, or records, registers, or files or offers for recordation, registration, or filing in a government office a written statement which has been falsely made, completed, or altered, or in which a false entry has been made, or which contains a false statement or false information. We have two more: false swearing, which is a class 6 felony. A person commits false swearing by making a false sworn statement, believing it to be false. And then a class 2 misdemeanor of simulating legal process. A person commits simulating legal process if such person knowingly sends or delivers to another any document falsely purporting to be an order or other document that simulates civil or criminal process. So if we do have sovereigns who have started down that path of making false filings, there are criminal charges that can be sought against them. And we're going to see a video of a judge handling one in Florida. And I cut it out of the video because he was chatting with one of the lawyers at the end, and he said, "Oh yeah, I've got a number of liens against me." So a chargeback order is something that a sovereign citizen can claim. They'll use a chargeback order in response to bills because they do not recognize U.S. currency. They believe that when the U.S. went off the gold standard in 1933, we went bankrupt. And again, we've all been pledged as collateral for the national debt, and as well as a secret account with money for each citizen. The message intended by this order is that the bill will be paid by the United States Treasury from the sovereign citizen's straw man account. It is common for documents that they file and send to businesses, banks, and courts to say, in effect, the failure to deny or respond is deemed to be acceptance of their position, so they will default you. Some of the indicators of a sovereign citizen are written signatures and markings. They'll use all lower or uppercase. Again, they can add L or Bay to their names. Unnecessary notary seals, all rights reserved. Again, that's the UCC 1-308. The use of brackets or other nonsense to separate first and last names. The use of brackets around zip codes or the lack of a zip code. Odd punctuation of names, typically involving colons and hyphens. Negative averment appears on various documents with the idea that it puts the burden on the official to respond. If they say a flesh and blood, if they use red ink, a red fingerprint, personal or postal stamp on documents under duress, or documents on legal-sized paper, for some reason they love to use legal-sized paper, which is just so inconvenient. And again, for those who don't believe that any of this is real, Scott Davis just last week sent me some stuff from McDowell Mountain, and it was in red ink. There was a red fingerprint. There were crazy notary seals. Surely you must be joking. All right. And other things a sovereign citizen might say or talk about: they're against the Federal Reserve or banking institutions. You can be discussing a driver's license, registration, or ticket, but they're obviously angry at other government agencies such as FEMA, the EPA, the United States Postal Service, the Census Bureau. I have John Doe. You have John Doe written on the form. That is a corporation, fictitious person, and not me. Again, we're going to have a video that'll demonstrate that. And since the belief is that humans are born free, and once we get a birth certificate, which is a negotiable instrument, a fictitional person is created and is a corporation instead of a flesh and blood being, they are just showing up as surety. And since some birth certificates have all caps for the name of the baby, this confirms that the state has made a straw man. And this is my favorite. Somebody did come into Wickenburg and ask if we were in Admiralty Court. Do you see any bodies of water here? So this is an Admiralty Court. You have no authority over me. And in the courtroom, they believe the gold-fringed U.S. flag is the Admiralty or war flag. If you're using this flag, it means the court is operating under martial law. Courts have jurisdiction over only two types of criminal claims, common law or admiralty military tribunals. There cannot be common law criminal claims because there is no aggrieved party and the state does not count, because then the judge, as an employee of the state, has to recuse himself from the proceeding. And the existence of the bar between the audience and the parties to the case, the well, exists to make the courtroom symbolically transform into the bridge of a ship, allowing the judge to act as a captain under admiralty law. So that's why they won't, some of them will stop short of the well of the court. They'll stop at that bar because they don't want to submit to the jurisdiction of the court. All right, and speaking of admiralty courts, I had to do that. All right, so admiralty courts are conferred by the U.S. Constitution. Federal district courts have original subject matter jurisdiction over any civil case of admiralty or maritime jurisdiction. Federal courts are called admiralty courts when exercising admiralty or maritime jurisdiction, and that is conferred by 28 U.S.C. section 1333. Needless to say, we are not admiralty courts. All right, safety when assisting a sovereign citizen, and this is important for staff and for judges. Spontaneous sovereign citizen violence is a possibility, especially for law enforcement and public officials. It is not as common for court staff. However, it is important that staff recognize them quickly and respond accordingly. Hopefully we know that they're coming, and if we're expecting them, we can consider and prepare for adequate security. If they're a walk-in, alert court security. If they're one of the Moors, then it's probably going to be pretty obvious. But you'll see some of them can take you by surprise when you ask them, are you blah, blah, blah? And they say, no, I'm the corporate entity representing blah, blah, blah. And like, really? Okay. So they can surprise you. Communicate with coworkers so that they know what's happening. Have a code word or a safe word or other means to alert others. If you become worried, review the court procedures for pushing that red button or calling 911 if a problem arises. They may seem like harmless cranks and most likely will not present danger. Generally, they're just more disagreeable than violent, but it is best to be prepared. And speaking of safety,
the judge denied his request for probation, which apparently set Redden off.
I appreciate that, but I think it's time that he gets a taste of something else, because I just can't with that history. In accordance with the laws of the state of Nevada, this court locked.
The judge was injured, her condition being monitored, and a courtroom officer was sent to the hospital. A statement from the court says, we commend the heroic acts of the judge's staff, law enforcement, and all others who subdued the defendant. We are reviewing our protocols. In the aftermath, the judge was seen holding her head, but talking and able to walk away.
That was not a sovereign citizen, but I had to include that video because it was just such an athletic leap over the bench. It's actually a great leap. Luckily, the judge looked up just in time. But that just to demonstrate that it can be dangerous. I think most of our courts have elevated benches, so hopefully someone's not going to be good enough to get over the bench like that guy did. But now we've come to the serious portion of the presentation. This is a much longer presentation, and it's mostly directed to law enforcement, but I did just want to provide a few minutes of it.
May the 20th, 2010 started out like any other day. Two veterans of our West Memphis, Arkansas Police Department, Bill Evans and Brandon Powdert, were patrolling the interstate as part of the department's drug and addiction team, something they loved to do. They became involved in what seemed to be a routine traffic stop, though I've always warned my officers there is no such thing. But really, how much more routine can you get than pulling over a father and son in what looked like a church bus? My men didn't realize who or what they were dealing with. Neither officer made it home. And one of them was my son. I'm Bob Powdert, chief of the West Memphis Police Department. My officers, Bill and my son, Brandon, didn't realize that there are people at war with this country that are not international terrorists. They are seemingly ordinary people, just like you and me, but they don't recognize the federal government's authority to impose laws or taxes on them. They're known as sovereign citizens. Their beliefs may sound so out there that they appear comical or crazy, but don't discount or ignore these people because they are willing to kill and be killed for these beliefs. We as law enforcement officers need to recognize this very real threat so we can protect ourselves. And maybe if Brandon and Bill had been able to recognize the warning signs of sovereign beliefs, they'd be alive today.
And the warning sign there was, and you saw one of the guys get out of the car and point to his license plate, is that was a fake license plate. So they had created their own license plate, and again, we have security who are screening for weapons. That shouldn't happen. But it can get dangerous. And again, thanks to Kim Hassel. She does have some staff do's and don'ts with a sovereign citizen. Again, I think it's important for us to know this as well. Be smile and calming, be patient, listen and attentive, be non-judgmental, show interest, show empathy by using some of their terms or gestures. Don't overdo it. Speak a little quietly and slower than them. Avoid missteps and remain on task. Do not challenge their documents or beliefs. Do not refer to their documents as fraudulent. Do not give your full name or personal information. Again, that's for staff. Do not let your ego kick in. This will contribute to or escalate an argument rather than guide its de-escalation. Don't get caught up in the rhetoric or appear unfriendly or impatient. Explain your purpose or intentions as you would in any other circumstance. The fact that you're being challenged does not change your training. Be creative, be thorough, but most of all, be safe. And your courtroom toolbox. So be prepared, review the file in advance. Again, hopefully you know that this is coming. If you don't, if you need to take a break, take a break. Judges have to go to the bathroom. So you can take a break whenever you need to take a break. I would make sure that the FTR is on the entire time. I mean, I would recommend the FTR be on any time you have a human in the courtroom other than you or on screen in a virtual setting. But make sure that recording is on. And have a strategy. And so the boxes to the right are some of the strategies. I'm sorry, we're out of time. I have to leave enough time for other folks in the courtroom. I need to think about this a bit before I make a decision on your case. And by the way, these excuses will apply to any situation, regardless of whether they're SRLs, sovereign citizens, or even represented parties. Remember, there is value in formality. Always maintain your control, maintain your demeanor. Again, take any break if necessary and leave the recorder on whenever there's a litigant in the courtroom. And some more specific tools. So the failure to approach the bench. And so again, if they're gonna stop and not come all the way up because they don't wanna submit to your jurisdiction, if you're doing civil traffic, we have civil traffic rule 10C. So a defendant's failure to admit or deny responsibility under rules 10A or B, or to personally appear at the date and time specified in the ticket, or at the date and time specified in a summons, or to appear at any subsequently scheduled court proceeding, or a defendant's failure to file a written statement prior to a documentary hearing, shall result in a default pursuant to rules 21 and 22. And ARS section 28-1596 essentially says the same thing. So if you've got the person who won't approach, then you can say, if you don't approach, then that is a failure to appear and I'm going to enter a default. If the person says, I'm not Susie Smith, I am a surety for the corporate entity of Susie Smith, or some other nonsense like that, if Susie Smith is not present, then I'm going to enter a default. I had one person who argued with me continuously that rather than an admission or a denial, he wanted to file a motion to dismiss. And well, the civil traffic rules don't permit a motion to dismiss. You either admit or deny, or I default you. And so he would not do either, and so I defaulted him. So that's how you handle the failure to approach or the failure to properly plead. It's not as harsh as it used to be because we don't suspend driver's licenses for civil traffic anymore, but still people don't like to be defaulted. There is a default fee. That is your remedy there. For a criminal case, announce you will declare a failure to appear and issue a warrant. That generally gets their attention. So when they say, I'm not Susie Smith, I'm a surety that represents the corporation of Susie Smith or some other nonsense. Well, if Susie Smith isn't here, I'm going to issue a warrant. It doesn't work quite as well when they're already in custody. So if you have one who is already in custody, I think a solution there is, well, if the wrong person was brought to the courtroom, then you'll just have to be taken back to jail until we can bring the right one here. Keep in mind, if the criminal person also doesn't admit that they're who they say they are or approach the bench, if they have civil violations, those will be defaulted along with issuing of a warrant. All right, so this is a long video on a judge in Florida dealing with this. And this will really demonstrate a lot of the concepts that we've heard. And the judge had warning because at one point he says he remembers from last week. So he was prepared for this. And to some extent, he's playing along. This is not exactly how I would handle this, because like I said, if you're not going to admit who you are, if you're not going to say that who you are, then you're not here, then that person's not here. And unless you're an attorney, you can't represent that person. So I'm not talking to you. Now, this, as you can see, this person's already in custody. It's not as fruitful to say, well, I'm going to issue a warrant for your arrest. It doesn't carry the same amount of weight, but I think you're still saying, well, then we'll send you back to jail. And when we find the right David Hall, then we'll address it with David Hall. So he does it a little differently, and let's watch how he does it. Again, if this doesn't play well, I'm going to attach a clean copy at the end of this, or you can just click the link to adjust the videos.
Okay. Now, Mr. Hall, so would you like, you wanted to say something?
Yes. May I speak, Judge?
Well, don't tell me about what happened or did not happen regarding the DUI, but if you want to tell me about something.
I'd like to state some things.
Go ahead.
I'd like to state some things for the record. Thank you, Judge. Judge John Hurley, I do accept your oath of office here today for the record, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Does this court take judicial notice of your oath, sir, with all due respect?
I take judicial notice of my own oath. Yes, sir, I do.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Sir, today I'm appearing as the agent and settler for David Hall.
Okay. Okay. Could you get Mr. Hall for me then, sir? Where is he?
I go by that name, sir. My name sounds exactly like the defendant's, and I'm here to settle that matter today.
So are you and David Hall one and the same person?
I'm not a person. I'm an individual. David Hall is a person. Okay. I am
are
the
you
agent to that
David
name.
Hall one and the same individual?
I go by the name David Hall, sir, and okay. I'm here about that matter today.
Okay. So you go by the name David Hall. Okay, so this is what we're going to do. The person who goes by the name of David Hall is standing in front.
I'm the individual. I am an individual, not a person.
You're not a person.
Yes, David Hall is a person. I am a private individual. David Hall is a person under color of law, sir.
Okay, where's David Hall then? The person David Hall.
Exists on paper, sir. David Hall is a corporation. Okay. This action is under color of law, sir, and I do understand that. I am here in my real capacity as the private individual for that name, okay, and I'm here about that matter.
You're the private individual, David Hall.
I'm the settler, sir.
I'm
the settler to David Hall, sir.
Are you the private individual, David Hall?
Yes.
Good. Okay, we got that straight. We agree on that. Okay, now, David Hall, the private individual. I'm looking at your driving record right now. Multiple failures to pay traffic tickets for the individual, David Hall, not the person. But, sir, what I'm going
to do. Can you clarify, sir? I'm not sure I understand that, but I am happy to settle this matter right now if somebody will make presentments. Nobody has made presentment, and I've asked numerous times and for the record.
When you say presentment, what do you mean by presentment?
Presentment of the charging instrument for set off and settlement, sir. I am the settler.
I just told you what it is. I told you what your charge. What I told you what the individual
presentment
David Hall did.
Judge.
Yes, sir.
I will require somebody to make me a presentment of the charging instrument on paper so that I may settle that matter. I'm here as settler,
We're not settling. Today's not the day to settle matters for these kind of charges, all right? We don't settle them today, all right?
May I say something else for the record, sir?
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I am secured party under a UCC filing at the Secretary of State, 201-308-717-006.
Okay.
I am secured party to David Hall on the record and through a filing at the Secretary of State, sir. I appear here today as the settler, agent, not the person, but the individual. And I don't think I should have, you understand the difference between a person and an individual.
And you're the individual, but you're not the person. Is that correct?
Correct.
Got
correct.
It. I'm going to write that down. Settler. Agent. An individual. But you're not the person. You got it. I think, I think it was last week you told me this too. And I was a little uncertain, but it's all become very clear now. Now, okay, the settler, the agent, the individual, but he's not the person. Okay, so does the settler, the agent, the individual have any money in the bank?
Yes.
Okay, how much money does the settler, the agent, the individual have in the bank?
I'm not certain at this time, sir.
Okay.
Only that I will give it an affirmative that there is money in a bank account.
Okay. And how long has the settler, the agent, and the individual lived in Broward County?
25 years, sir.
Okay, does the settler, agent, individual own any property in Broward County other than personal effects?
No, sir.
Okay. Now, does the person own any property or have any money in the bank?
In conjunction with myself, sir, in conjunction with myself, we both have. Yes, I'm the agent for that account also.
Oh, got it. Okay, so now. Okay, now, here's what we're going to do. The settler, the agent, the individual, and maybe even the person, David Hall, has been charged with DUI. A DUI while the settler, the agent, and even the person, David Hall, was out on bond on two cases, one felony and one misdemeanor, for license suspended. So the court believes that the settler, the agent, the individual, and even the person, David Hall, represents a danger to the community because the settler, the agent, the individual, and even the person continues to drive without a valid driver's license, in fact, a suspended driver's license in the state of Florida. And so that being said, the court is going
to say, may I make a correction, sir?
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I'm traveling. You used the term driving, and I was traveling, sir. Traveling.
Okay. All right. So the settler, the agent, the individual, or the person, David Hall, for traveling on a public highway or public road in the state of Florida, was allegedly doing so without a valid driver's license and has done it several times in the past. So today.
This is alleged, sir?
Yes, sir. It is alleged.
Allegedly?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So today, the court's going to set the settler, the agent, the individual's bond, and even the person's bond today on count four at $10,000 because the settler, the agent, the individual, and the person has not stopped driving, even though the settler, the agent, the individual, and the person continues to drive without a driver's license. So that being said, count one is $500, count four is $10,000, and the court will revoke the bond for the settler, the agent, the individual, and even the person of David Hall on 14016582 CF10 and 14053909 TC30A. Both cases will cause the settler, the agent, the individual, and even the person, David Hall, not to be able to be released from the Broward County Jail until further notice of the court. So,
may I post bond, sir?
Well,
is there any other?
Are you asking me as the settler, the agent, the individual, or are you asking me as the person?
Sir, I'm asking as the individual appearing before you today about this matter.
Well, the individual, the settler, the agent, the individual, or the person can post the bond. However, the settler, the agent, or the individual, David Hall, will not be released in any event because this court is revoking the bond on a felony case and a misdemeanor case on the settler, the agent, the individual, and the person, David Hall.
Well, where is my remedy, sir?
Well, whose remedy are you asking for? The settler, the agent, the individual, or the person?
I'm asking for the opportunity.
Who are you speaking on behalf of right now?
Sir, I don't understand that question. I believe that you're trying to confuse me now.
No, I'm not.
Simply separating myself from the person. They are two different entities,
right,
and I know
that. The court is not viewing you as two different people. The court is viewing you as for the purpose of these cases.
Then what entity are you referring to me as? Because I'm referring to me as
the David Hall, who's the settler, the agent, the individual, and the person.
I'm not the person, sir.
Okay,
I am not
the person, David Hall. Tell him he's not leaving jail either, all right?
Sir, then may I ask what my remedy is? Can you provide me a remedy so that
the remedy is you don't really have a remedy where you can appeal it to the Fourth District Court of Appeal.
How long am I going to be held, sir?
You can be released.
I would like to settle this matter, sir.
We're not going to settle it today.
Then I'm being denied I'm being denied my remedy. Remedy is being denied. For the record, I am the real individual, and this accident is under color of law, and I don't understand this color of law action.
Okay. Well, have a nice day. Thank you. Okay.
All right. So a few thoughts about what we saw there. The distinction between I'm the individual, but not the person. Okay, I don't even know what that means. Maybe I'm not smart enough to understand what that even means, but that is what he was continuing to assert. But again, if you were not the, if you, or, and the judge could have just said, well, I consider individual to be person, and so therefore you are David Hall, and we're, you know, we can proceed. But if, again, if you somehow buy the argument that that's not David Hall in front of you, then unless he's a member of the state bar, he can't appear for David Hall, so you can't proceed. So you either issue the warrant or you send him back to jail. The judge had the somewhat humorous conversation with him. But you did hear, I was traveling, I wasn't driving. And you're going to hear this a lot for the driver's license cases. The actual phrase is, I am but a free man traveling upon the land. And in the case with the Moor, and that was his defense too, is he wasn't driving driving on a suspended license. He was traveling. Well, how are you traveling? Well, were you in a vehicle? Yes. Were you on a road? Yes. Well, then that's driving on a suspended license. Thank you. So if they're disruptive at the trial, in a civil matter, the litigant has a responsibility under the Justice Court Rule 103 to act in an orderly, courteous, and dignified manner. And then remember, we have Criminal Rule 9.2. And so a defendant who engages in disruptive conduct after being warned that such conduct will result in expulsion from a proceeding forfeits the right to be present at that proceeding. At the time of expulsion, the court must inform the defendant that he or she can return upon a promise to the court of future orderly conduct. There is a continuing duty to permit participation. So after expulsion, the court must use every feasible means to allow the defendant to watch, hear, and be informed of the proceedings' progress and to consult with counsel at reasonable intervals. The court should inquire periodically if the defendant wishes to reacquire the right to be present. And then reacquiring the right, the court must allow the defendant to return to the proceeding if the defendant personally assures the court of future good behavior. If the defendant later engages in disruptive conduct, the court may exclude the defendant from the proceeding without additional warning. So what happened with my Moore is during the trial, he suddenly decided in a loud and persistent manner that he needed to see my certification. And when he was told that's not going to happen and to be seated, he would not partake. And so he was warned, he continued to disrupt. And so I did have him escorted out of the courtroom. For some reason, we had about three or four officers who were witnesses at that trial. So there was plenty of security. He was seated outside. At a couple of times during the process, we did go out there and ask if he was ready to come back in to proceed, and he was not, so that trial did proceed in his absence. So the trial did take place without him. Give plenty of warnings before you do this. You do see that you do need to give that warning. And then remember, you must not sentence without the presence of the defendant, so bring the defendant back in. What I think was pretty clear is, and you'll see this with the First Amendment auditors when we get to them next, is they want you to lose your cool. They want you to overreact. And I mean, this guy, the Moore, was basically wanting me to find him in contempt and throw him in jail for that. So he could make a much bigger case out of it. And I'm not going to do that. You know, I'll just have you leave, sit outside while we do the case as adults, and then bring you back in. and sentence you. And if you don't pay your fine, then we'll issue a warrant and we'll pick you up and you'll spend some time in jail on the warrant, not for driving on a suspended license or not for being a free man traveling upon the land. The other point here is, how in the world is this not Rule 11? When you have someone who is just seemingly sincerely telling you that I am an individual and not a person, and how is this person not Rule 11? And the person probably wouldn't be found to be Rule 11. And a lot of these people don't want their attorneys. We're going to see another example of how that can backfire in a bit. All right, now we're going to move on to First Amendment auditors. For those of our courts do have security, so for the most part, it's going to be security in the front window. They're who's going to deal with them. They're not going to make it into the court, but it's good information to know. And thank you to Scott Davis for a lot of this information. But what is the First Amendment? And this is the First Amendment, not the First Commandment, sorry. But the First Amendment is, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And First Amendment auditors are so-called citizen journalists, and they claim they have a right to take video and photos in any government or public space or office, not when it comes to the courts. We do have Supreme Court Rules 122 and 122.1, which do require specific permission before recording anything in court buildings. Auditors often refuse to self-identify or explain what they're doing, and just like with our sovereigns, they can do intend to provoke a negative response in order to record instances of governmental wrongdoing or otherwise depict public employees in an unfavorable light. And they do want to obtain popularity and money flowing from social media views. It's all about the clicks. And some of these First Amendment auditors have 500,000 followers. Unbelievable. And this video is much slicker than the ones that I do. This was done by Scott.
What's that lady's name? What's that lady's name that came already?
He just came in.
Are you asking any questions? What's that lady's name? Because she came out here and tried to violate my rights. What is her name?
What's her name? Right here.
The lady with the
are
we inside there?
Are we
past it?
No.
Okay, so then that doesn't apply. What is that lady's name? Bro, before you say anything else, what is that lady's name?
Every time the store opens, you're not allowed to.
What is? No, that's false. Don't tell me something I can't do when I legally can do it. Legally can do it. First Amendment protected activity.
Okay.
Don't tell me I can't do something I can do. I'm not in there. I'm out here. This is public.
Well, you need to stay out of these.
No, I don't. I don't need to do anything you say. What is that lady's name? How about you give me that? What is that lady's name?
Tell me.
What is that lady's name? What is that officer's name?
And so you see three criminal charges there, and the cameraman and the guy who was talking, not in this particular instance, but in one of our cities, were charged with the three charges you see there. So criminal trespass, which is a class 3 misdemeanor, disorderly conduct and harassment, which are class 1 misdemeanors. One of them pled to a couple of them. The other was found guilty. So we can get prosecutors to charge for this, and they can be held criminally responsible for this. So what to do? It's best not to engage them at all, but if you must do so to protect someone's privacy, ask politely but firmly that they stop. As you notify a supervisor who would notify security, allow security to have that interaction. Assume an audit video will end up on YouTube or other social media platforms. Do not attempt to take the auditor's recording device or otherwise initiate physical contact with the auditor. If this happens in the courtroom, Because I have heard someone take a picture in the courtroom, and I will make them come up and show me the camera, have them delete the picture, and then have them go to their garbage and delete it from the garbage so that it's deleted. If you don't hear it, what can you do? It's not an official record. For our virtual proceedings, right now, we don't have the technology, I don't think, to stop somebody from recording what we're doing on virtually. Again, it's not going to be the official recording. Interestingly enough, there is a bill pending in the legislature right now that would make it illegal to record somebody without everyone's knowledge and agreement. So that would make it illegal to record a court proceeding without announcing that you're doing it and getting the approval of everyone. But we'd have to know that they're doing it, and we probably are not going to know that they're doing it. But if you catch it, stop it. And so this is, I indicated this a couple minutes ago about an ugly situation for an attorney. And this was a special action done by Judge Adam Driggs, who is the husband of our associate presiding judge, Lenore Driggs. Thank you. And in this case, it can't be cited for precedent, but it is informative. And what happened here is the defendant would live stream his appointments with his attorneys. And he was a very disagreeable person. He wanted to raise ridiculous defenses. Gosh, who'd believe that? And then when the attorney, he'd live stream the ugly meeting with them, violating attorney-client privilege, by the way. And then when the attorney wouldn't do what that person wanted, would then dox the attorney, which means reveal all their personal information on the internet. One of the attorneys had to turn her phone and her social media off for quite a while. And in fact, she is now moving to Seattle. It got that ugly. And so they got to about the fourth attorney. The first three attorneys withdrew. He asked the Mesa City Court to appoint a fourth attorney, and the court said, no, at this point, we're not going to let you do that to another attorney. A special action was taken up, and Judge Driggs decided that you're not entitled to another attorney. I think it's good to know that this is an option. It's an extreme option, so we need to be very careful if we're going to do that, but there is precedent for that. All right, so we're going to do our closing toolbox, and so you see the Adornetto logo, so these are Adornetto's suggestions on dealing with difficult people, so be prepared. So first, do not take it personally. Do not let them get under your skin. It's not you. Remember the big picture. Remember what you're going home to. Chances are you are in a much better situation than that person in front of you who is being so incredibly difficult. So just keep that in mind. Keep your inner peace. Two, do not engage. Say as little as possible. You will not win. You're not going to convince them of anything. Never wrestle with pigs. You both get dirty and the pig likes it. That is George Bernard Shaw. Senator John McCain used to say that all the time as well. Reflect. Be careful. It may just be a word, but be careful. It may just be a word salad. It almost certainly is a word salad with the more and him just spouting just off stuff that didn't go together, but sounded important. It was all I could do just not to say what you said made no sense whatsoever. I had to put this cartoon there of immigration. Let me do the talking, because we've all had spouses who did want to do the talking. Like, and if you look at this picture, it's like, does it matter who does the talking? And that's kind of like how you can feel when you're dealing with someone who's this difficult. conclude as soon as possible. Consider whether you want to state the reasons on the record. Again, you're not going to convince them of anything anyway. If it does get appealed, the appellate judge will have to uphold your decision if there's any way in the record to support it. So you don't have to state reasons on the record. And again, you're not going to convince them if you do just want to get out of there. All right. And then attorneys are not difficult people, but they can put you in difficult situations. And so I do have some tips on dealing with attorneys. And the first is reflect and direct. So again, do not let them get under your skin. That is how they win. Allow them to make a record. It's their job to advocate for their client. So as opposed to the difficult people who are just spouting nonsense, attorneys may be making a valid point. Let them make that record. Reflect. Sometimes they may be right. Attorneys must be candid to tribunals. They are required to be honest with you. If they're not, they can get a bar complaint. Just like you don't want to get a judicial complaint, attorneys don't want to get a bar complaint. And so then reconsider if necessary. So you do want to think, observe, digest, and reflect. And if they continue to argue, counsel, your objection is noted for the record. We are moving on. Repeat as necessary. All right, so there's three attachments. As I indicated, the Maricopa Administrative Order, our form, request to declare the litigant vexatious. We have a best practice on disruptive and vexatious litigants. I don't mention it much. I don't think it's one of our better best practices. A closing thought from Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. If we treat people as they are, we make them worse. If we treat people as they ought to be, we help them become what they are capable of becoming. A second closing thought, I found this a few months ago and just thought this was outstanding. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. You know, if you don't know me, you don't know what pain or difficulties I've experienced in my life, what I've had to overcome or what I've had to deal with. The same is with anyone who's appearing before you. So just always keep that in mind. All right, any questions, thoughts, or feelings? And that link down here below is the link to the clean copies of the videos. Any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns? All right, I've either put everyone to sleep or been that clear. I've got one more video. I am going to have to turn the recording off because it is copyrighted, and then I can't put it on YouTube if I record it. So